Mr. Clarkson, reel 33.
Every time they just, if we were coming in from a ship, I didn't mind the fish guard so much. That was better because you were in your own just artisan's mess there. And it was more of a home from home, if you like. That was where I, for the second time, I told you about the first time I tried to qualify for a diver. And instead of that, I found out afterwards that the application had never gone through. Well, when I was on the fish guard, I thought I'll have a go at it again. And so I put in to qualify for an artificial diver. And the captain said, yes, application to be made. And a chum of mine, he's a great footballer. He was a diver, and he said to me, you'll regret this. And I said, why? What's wrong with it? Oh, he wouldn't tell me. Another friend of mine, he was a diver, and he did have a bad time. As a thing that once you were a diver, you couldn't pack it up. Anyhow, the first fellow that warned me about it, I found out afterwards why it was. He always used to say that if he went to a ship that he didn't like, he could get out of it. And that's what it was, we found out. The Lucia, she was a repair ship and she was going to China. And Tom was suddenly detailed for the Lucia. And I always remember he just bought a motorbike and we were galloping around together. And he went aboard the Lucia, and being a PO, passing the doctor, you see, the old sergeant commander said, all right, Hasty? And he said, yes, sir. And off he went to the Lucia. When he got aboard there, he didn't know it, that she was sailing that night. Whew, he didn't want that. He had Diggins ashore and he had a motorbike. And so when he appeared before the doctor there, he said, are you all right? He said, I don't think so. He said, I think I've got a varicose vein. Oh, a diver with a varicose vein. And he did have one. And he must have been concealing it, you see. So what did they do? Of course, the doctor had already passed him aboard the fish guard. He got a rub down over it. They sent Tom to Hazlitt, have this vein taken out of his leg. And while he was there, the sister informed him that when he got back, he was in the rattle. And he was. He came back and he dipped a good conduct badge and had 28 days leave stop for being a diver, having concealing a varicose vein. Just then, I went up to pass the doctor to go to the diving school. And he stood me in a bath of boiling water, and it was in the winter time. And I was in there for about half an hour while he was sanding me and going to the various performance. And then eventually he said, yes, you're all right. And I stood beside him and he was just signing the paper to say I was medically fit for diving, and he just rubbing his hand down my leg there. And there was just like a little pimple that the heat had brought out. And he put his finger on it and I said, it's not a varicose vein, is it? Oh, no, he said, but it might trouble you where it might develop into one when you're dying. And, oh dear, I thought, that's it. So I said, well, suppose I go to Hazlitt and have a dive. Oh, yes, he said, that'd be all right. And then you can go to the diving school. Of course, away I went to Hazlitt on the Tuesday and had this. When I got there, it was so bad that he couldn't find it. And the surgeon stood me up and he said, let me see, I'm doing you this morning. Where is it? And he couldn't see this vein. And so eventually he decided where it should be. And he stood me up, got a needle, a big needle, it was like a palm needle, sterilised it, and he said, it should be about here. He stuck it in there, scratched it down there, there, and down here. There it is, look. In three places, and he says where it should be. I was operated on and took this vein out, got back to the fish guard, and The doctor there said, hold on, before I got back, I said I had to do a month's light duty. I was in. Wasn't a ballet football, I wasn't a dancer or anything. Well, that was the first thing I did. And after about 6 weeks of this, I was having a good time and I decided to pack it all in and go back to duty. And I went to see a doctor. And it was a new one. And it was one who didn't believe in diving. And I remember going up behind him and I'd slept in the Gosport Ferry all night in the stokehold because we'd been to a licensed victualler's dance. And a gnat had bit me. I had a great eye out here. And I suppose I was still dirty. And when I got aboard there, a friend of mine said, "Here, you look ill, Judd. Get a tot out of my bottle in the locker." So I had three or four tots. And then I went up to the sick bay. And I was up there, the surgeon commander sitting in front. And I was behind in the queue, and he called me up. He said, "Get your clothes off and get into bed." I said, "What for?" He said, "You're ill, aren't you?" "No." I said, "I'm not ill." He said, "You look ill." Well, he said, "What have you come to see me for?" And I said, "To go to the diving school." "Diving school?" he said. "You're qualifying for a coffin, man." And I could see this chief sick berth steward behind him, and he was going like this. For me to shut my man. And I told him, I said, he said, "I'm not going to pass you for time." I said, "Oh, I see." I said, "I've been over to Hasler." I said, "Act about just for the benefit of the students, sailing." And he said, "Now, you don't want to go diving." He said, "How much do you get out of that?" And I said, "Oh, sixpence a day, but there is the experience." I said, "And when I leave the Navy, I should do a bit of diving then. Good living." He said, "I don't believe in it." He said, "You'll get a bubble in your blood." He said, "You want to enjoy your pension, don't you?" And I said, he said, "You carry on joining," he said, "night time if necessary." He said, "I don't believe in diving." He said, "You leave here, go to Whale." I said, "I've already passed." "Ah, you might have done," he said. "I've got the last say." "Now," he said, "go away and don't think about it." He said, "And you'll thank me in years to come." And I went away. I was on draft with the Iron Duke 3 days after it, and I went to see him. He said, "Oh, my old friend Clarkson." "Now," he said, "I'll inoculate you now." He said, "You can go on leave today. Look, and that'll get you 10 days. Don't you ever think about diving again." Anyway, when by the time I got back, I was too old. 28 was the age limit, you see.
And the reasons you gave to the doctor there, was that the reasons you wanted to go diving, particularly? That it was experience and a chance to get a skill you could...
Oh, yes. It was there, although this one fellow said to me, "Look," he said, "look at my hair." He was grey at a very early age. I knew him during the war when he was blown up on the cross channel. A railway boat, which was an armed steamer then, and he swam with a broken arm for about 4 hours before he was picked up. He was a diver then, and then later on he was at the West Indies station on the Comus, and they were torpedo firing. The torpedo got stuck in the mud at the bottom, and he had to go down to release it while they were pulling on wires from the ship. And they didn't... He came up eventually, having secured a wire to it. War victory, he came up top, got into the cutter, the diving boat. They took his helmet off, and just then they started pulling away on the capstan on the ship with his wire, pulled the torpedo out of the mud, and it shot up, hit the bottom of the boat and capsized it. And there was poor Victor there with the, in his diving suit, the weights on, the boots and all the lot. He nearly drowned again. Well, he tried to pack up several times, but they wouldn't let him. I don't know. Once a diver, they said, always a diver.
Can I go back a little, just on to some other things, in a more general way, again? Because I think we've gone over that. Can I just ask you once, fairly quickly, about life for the sailor in Portsmouth when you were in barracks or when you were alongside or when you were at anchor in a town like Portsmouth? or any of the other. What was the attractions for the sailor? What sort of things could he do?
Mostly the pubs.
Mostly the pubs.
Yes. There were hundreds and hundreds of pubs in Portsmouth, and they used to cater for the... they had some weird and wonderful names that you couldn't very well print them.
What were they? What were the better known names?
Well, there was one pub down at the end of Charlotte Street. It was the Monarch, and that was called the Cunt and Drag Ropes. There was another one called the Blazing Arsehole, that was it. They were places that you could go into and you could more or less enjoy. So everything was, free and easy.
Was it mainly sailors who went? Would you get civilians in them at all, or mainly sailors?
Oh, yes. You get civilians in there, but they were mostly sailors. And, of course, everybody wore uniform in those days. And we had a big fleet. And I used to have a diggings ashore one time when I decided to live a natural, respectable life. And it was nice then to go ashore and change into civvies. But apart from that, that was the only entertainment for the sailors. And then, of course, there was a lot of, I should call them, unofficial brothels, Blossom Alley and all that part of the off Queen Street, there where all the old hags lived.
That was quite notorious and famous.
Oh, yes. And then there was a murder down there. Brighton, what do they call her? Brighton Rose or somebody. That caused quite an upheaval for years to come. They never called anybody for it, but it was obviously a matlow. But all that place, of course, during the war got bombed out, cleaned right out. They moved, a long time before that, they moved all the population from there, the slum area, out to just outside of Portsmouth to get the name of the place there, suburb. And they reckon then that they were keeping coal in the baths, donkeys in the living room. They were really very low class.
That was the kind of golden mile, if you like, or the red light part of
that was, yes.
Quite well known. Was it off limits at all, or was that where, could men go there without having to fear the police, shore police? They wouldn't interfere, they wouldn't be around there.
Nobody went round there. No. And all the Queen Street area, it was, seemed to be every second place was a pub. But there was life there, you can understand. Plenty of music and. Otherwise, we used to, as another thing, of course, times have changed now. Sundays, that was a regular thing. Everybody used to go for a walk on a Sunday evening and walk right from the dockyard right out to Cosham. The civilians used to do the same. There was no such thing as cars or anything like that. And they'd all walk out to Cosham or get on the tram at Cosham and go to Horndean, what they call the Horndean Railway, and then have a few pints at the Good Intent, then catch it back to Cosham, and then walk about 4 or 5 miles just from there. And then they used to have the fair up on the hill at Cosham, and everybody used to go there. The Common, see, on South Sea Common, they used to have fairs there. But
would you say Portsmouth rather was a sailor's town?
It was.
It put itself out for the sailors? That's what I'm.
Yeah, well, the people relied on that for their living. For instance, Charlotte Street was the market, And the shops, of course, didn't close before 11 on Saturday nights. And even when we lived at Southsea, we used to go out at 8:30 on a Saturday night to do our shopping. And you could go along to Charlotte Street and you could get a joint there quite cheap because they had no refrigerators to keep the stuff in. Fish, you could buy boxes of fish at a, used to sell it off the auction up there. And then there were clubs scattered around. In Lake Row, we belonged to a workman's club there. We could drink all night, play billiards and dance and things. And they were all over Portsmouth, those places.
Would you say the sailor was welcome in Portsmouth then?
I mean, very welcome, yes.
There was no... Well, was there perhaps in certain areas a certain resentment, certain resistance?
What about the sailor? Like, not so much, no, because they, I think they were in the majority, probably, of the population there. They didn't get on well with the dockyard mateys. Dockyardmen and the Navy never liked each other. But apart from that...
And what reasons are there for that, precisely, do you think?
For one reason, that the Navy always regarded the dockyard workmen as a loafing lot who got money for doing nothing. They used to have songs about dockyardmen, 10 little dockyard mateys sitting on the dockyard wall. They used to finish up with... just like their fathers doing bugger all and